Hi, everyone. Welcome to Baltimore International, the program that connects Baltimore with worldwide community. I'm your host, Dave Custy, and today I'm speaking with Gina London in Arezzo, Italy. Gina London is a veteran CNN correspondent and anchor who now makes her living as an international communications consultant. Her clients are very diverse, from executives from large multinational companies to Iraqi political candidates to youth leaders in Cambodia. When she isn't traveling around the globe for work, she lives with her husband and six-year-old daughter in Arezzo, Italy, for nearly the past 3 years. Gina is a consultant, a traveler, a wife, and a mom. She was also once a proud Baltimorean. Her husband, Scotty Walsh, worked at the Children's Museum here in Baltimore, and their daughter attended the Bolton Hill Nursery School. For a time, Gina and State Representative Kiefer Mitchell ran a public affairs firm together, which allowed her to meet and be involved with plenty of movers and shakers here in Baltimore. Gina also says she has fond memories of visiting the Walters Art Gallery with her daughter, exploring the Inner Harbor, and eating gingerbread pancakes at Cafe Heim. Welcome to Baltimore Internet Radio, Gina.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
My pleasure. Give me a little short bio.
I really like to emphasize that I am a world traveler now, but I was a kid who grew up in a tiny, tiny town called Farmland, Indiana. It was actually not just the description of the area, but the actual name of the town, Farmland, Indiana, population about 1,200. We didn't even have a stop light in our town, only a stop sign. I was also marked forever by my pilot dad's death in a plane crash when I was 11. And as I later grew up to be a television journalist and met presidents and celebrities and especially real inspirational people, that empathy, I think, that I gained by having a real world life-changing experience at such a young age marked me forever is how I would be a journalist and how I would conduct my interviews and how I would relate to people. Then career-wise, moved later into international communications training, as you mentioned, and I've traveled also, as you mentioned, to dozens of countries, including Romania, Indonesia, the United Arab Emirates, and I did spend 6 months in Egypt living in Cairo, where I had my life threatened by the government on the front page of a newspaper.
Tell me the specifics of that.
The specifics of that is I was the first country director for a democracy-promoting nonprofit based in the United States called the International Republican Institute. And as such, with full knowledge of the then Hosni Mubarak regime, we were in the country conducting political party and opposition party trainings and interviews, and we were working to promote what transparent and interactive government's all about. And when we released our first political party assessment report, the government didn't like our true life answers about what the state of their democracy was or really wasn't. And what happened then was that the foreign ministry, the day that that report hit the press, called me into their office, sort of like going to the principal's office, but with much more dire consequences, potentially at risk than getting detention or getting some sort of reprimand from the principal. I went to the minister's office with two members of the United States Embassy backing me up and was told right then and there that the government was shutting our program down. I was invited to stay, but I could no longer have any sorts of interaction with anybody else as part of our program had outlined. And for example, I was actually supposed to have tea the very next day with Anwar Sadat's widow and was told under no circumstances could I do that. And at the same time that I was being taken to the carpet by the foreign minister, the Foreign Ministry Department of Egypt was actually submitting press releases calling me a spy, talking about their suspicions of what the intent of the United States government was with IRI in place. And really, a really negative campaign was being brought about when our staff, my staff was all Egyptian citizens. When they told me what this press release was saying, the Foreign Ministry's department, the office, denied ever having sent it. But we'd received copies of it from independent journalists that we identified and become friends with at that time. Then over the next 6 weeks, it became a bit surreal, like some sort of Kafkaesque experience where I would hear my name being mentioned on the floor of the parliament, being called for my arrest. But of course, this was all in Arabic, and it had to be told to me from my staff because I didn't speak Arabic. Mm-hmm. And it was just one of these really scary situations where you're not sure what's happening, except for that it's not positive, and there's really no way to refute what's being said about you and about your organization that you represent. But at the same time, it doesn't feel like it's really that dangerous because it just feels like it's a lot of words.
Right.
Until, like I said, about 6 weeks into it, a newspaper headline came out that my program officer, Hanny, came into my office that morning, and his face was really white, like something out of a movie. And I said, you know, what's happened? He says, now it's not just rhetoric. Now it's really serious. And I looked at a picture on the front page of this newspaper, Dave, mm-hmm. had my face, but then there was a graphic made on top of my face in the shape of a gun sight, those crosshairs.
Oh, great.
And then the banner headline, which again, in Arabic, I couldn't read it, but Hanny looked at me and he said, you know, this says eliminate the spy. He said, no, it actually... it's a little bit stronger than that. It's more like assassinate the spy.
Jeez.
So at that point, I picked up the phone. I called the embassy and I said, you know, I'm out. I so wanted to be a part of what I believed was a movement toward more transparent government, a more civil society. And I really did meet, including my staff, some amazing, inspirational people there. And yet I wasn't willing to stay after something like that came out, because it became very real and was very scary. So I cut short my trip, and I was out in 2 days from the time that article came out. That was 2006. Fast forward to now, and you see the tense situation that continues, the incredible situation that continues over there, with the pendulum swinging in a different direction now that Mubarak's out, but it's gotten no better. In fact, in some ways, it's gotten worse. I really love my international experiences, and I love working with developing democracies, but it's important now, I think, more than ever, to be aware the risks that people are taking when they do that sort of thing. And then every country's not welcoming you with open arms. It can be a very real, frightening situation.
It's terrifying. Jeez.
Yeah. So that's that story. But now, now
that's a good start there.
That newspaper. Now I have a lovely souvenir of a newspaper, and I still have some very...
Oh, you still have that? Oh.
Oh, yeah, that thing's framed. I mean, my goodness, that's sort of a keepsake.
a reminder,
now I'm safely, as you mentioned, living in Tuscany, which is much safer than Cairo these days, with my husband, entertainer Scotty Walsh, and our six-year-old rambunctious daughter, Lulu.
Let's talk a little bit about your experiences here in Baltimore. Living in Bolton Hill. When were you here?
We moved there in 2010. Mm-hmm. We were there for a little over a year, and it was a great experience. We had actually just moved from Paris, of all places, to Bolton Hill.
It's a natural progression.
Of course. It makes sense from one cosmopolitan, sophisticated city of light to another. Absolutely. Charm city of light. No, same thing.
That was just a nice little tourism plug you just did. Thank you.
You're very welcome. But in all truth, I do consider myself a constant tourist. And when we moved to Baltimore, I had worked for many years with CNN in D.C. and had done some work with Johns Hopkins and some different reports that came out of the Baltimore area, but I hadn't spent a great deal of time there. And when we moved to Baltimore, it was, as you mentioned in the introduction, for me to begin the public affairs firm and the business relationship I had with my longtime friend Kiefer Mitchell. And that's what brought us from Paris back to the D.C. area, and specifically to Baltimore. Mm-hmm. And I learned so much about going to the Francis Scott Key Memorial and to the fort there and to the Inner Harbor, and spending time with a lot of really interesting people and learning about the city and learning about the heritage and the different parts. And since we lived in Baltimore proper, mm-hmm. I really enjoyed that, the walkability of it. I mean, we would actually walk from Bolton Hill down to the Inner Harbor to go to the Children's Museum where my husband worked, and to go to the Science Center. And of course, the Walters, we practically lived there. They have a lovely program for children, mm-hmm. and my daughter really enjoyed it. So we had a great experience during the time that we were there. And then my husband found this opportunity to get a master's degree in physical theater here in Tuscany. Mm-hmm. And who wouldn't say no to that?
You're going to be traveling again.
That is right. As a matter of fact, my husband's wrapped up his program, and as such, we are wrapping up our experience here, which has been wonderful and tremendous too. And in a couple of months in June, we are planning to relocate to Ireland, to the lovely city south of Dublin called Cork.
Mm-hmm. What's happening in Cork?
Well, what's happening in Cork is my husband's a perpetual student, apparently, and I'm living on all of that. That fun gets us to travel to exciting places. He's found a PhD program that's of interest to him, also in theater. And so he is moving there, and we're happily going along with him. My communications consulting is such that if I'm near an airport or a place with an internet connection, I can work with my clients. So that makes it flexible for me. And I enjoy the opportunity to live in different places and experience those cultures and their histories and their, in Cork's case, their pubs, I think. And I think we'll have a really nice time getting to know the Irish situation as well.
So you'll be taking some clients with you, and then, of course, you'll be hoping to get more clients in Ireland. Tell me a little bit about how you would approach that.
Yeah, one of the things that's been great about the communications world is that I would say everything in business, in organizations, in nonprofits, no matter what line of work, obviously you here in radio, everything revolves around successful communications. Whether or not it's simply trying to communicate new financial targets for clients or new financial targets for your employees, or if it's about communicating a new message of change for managers or for the consumers. It's all about how you communicate that and how you connect with the people. And so often there are organizations who understand a lot about what their business is or what their mission is, but because they're a success at that, creating that widget or that great service, whatever, it doesn't always mean that they have a great way of communicating that that's compelling or that resonates with the client or with the consumer or even with their own employees. So to find ways to help them better motivate, better educate, and better inspire those people is what it's all about for me. Mm-hmm. And no matter where I am, if I'm in a business meeting or a social situation, there's a lot of times when that sort of need comes up. And it's a passion of mine to be able to help fill that gap whenever possible.
I have a few programs in terms of business development. One, I call it creating a blueprint for international business. Mm-hmm. And what you're talking about, it kind of permeates and pervades all throughout everybody that I've talked to that are successful in creating and developing and maintaining international business. Each one of them say that it's important that they treat their employees well. Mm-hmm. Because they have employees that have been with them for years and they could make more money elsewhere, but stay with them.
Right. And rewarding that kind of loyalty and acknowledging that kind of loyalty is critical, not because it's all glowy and touchy-feely, but because it actually really does produce results.
Right.
And I think that management, my husband happens to also have a master's in public administration with an emphasis on organizational leadership. So he can back me up on these communications ideas with the data that comes from real management results, that it is proven. It's not just, oh, we feel good about treating our employees right, and we hope that that generates some sort of a loyalty, but it actually is it's been demonstrated. And what I'm so excited about is that by the complementary approaches of management and communications, then you can see these effects and these results. And it's something that really is a great success story for those companies that have gotten it right and those companies that are now trying to move farther along in that direction.
Tell me a little bit about your family now. Tell me about Scotty and where is he going to be getting his PhD?
Well, his PhD is going to be from the University College of Ireland in their Cork campus. So it's the University College of Dublin, and they have campuses all around the country. And when he first was looking around because he was aspiring to go to that next level of obtaining a PhD, he found a program that was interesting in Dublin. And then as he actually traveled there, he'd been there before, but now he was traveling there as a parent, which changes your perspective on anything. It's one thing to go to Ireland as a Guinness-drinking single guy, but you go to Ireland as a dad, and you start thinking about, well, where would be a place to raise my family? And he reported back to me after his first visit to Dublin with those glasses on that he thought it would be better. Some friends had recommended, why don't you check out Cork? And they have a campus there and a great PhD program down there, plus the livability and the family raising opportunities there he thought were better. And so I will take him on his word on that, and off we go.
So what is his thesis about? You said physical theater, but what in particular?
Well, he's actually interested in a very emerging, interesting, speaking of combining organization and creative thinking and communications, he's interested in combining theater with the cognitive and the subconscious mind-body combination. So he actually was and is a magician since he was 8 years old, and has practiced everything from Houdini escapes to sleight of hand card tricks. But in the last couple of years, he's become more and more interested in the theatrical mentalism, sort of the theater of reading one's mind and influencing one to action on different things. And he's now combining that with a little bit of a neuroscience and a psychology approach, and exploring what does that do to our communications, what does that do to how we influence behaviors, all within the realm of how does that work as sort of the idea that entertainment is changed, and it's almost embracing the TED Talks that are out there, right, and making things in an entertaining but influential and educational combination. So that wasn't very succinct, but yet I'm not the one doing the thesis. He's trying to explore essentially that the mind is a computer that can be hacked, and how far can it go, and what parts of body, mind, reading on a visual way can we move into an influential way. And it's interesting, actually, that he found just last week, in fact, that the University College of Cork is hosting in May a Theater in the Cognitive Mind and Conscious Mind conference. So they're clearly interested in that as well. So it really couldn't have come at a better time that he is reaching out to them. It's really kind of an exciting thing. And of course, all of that really dovetails right in with the type of communications, trainings, and creative thinking and inspirational work that I do. So I'm excited about meeting new people in this regard and getting involved in the community. And as amazing and as fascinating that it's been for us here in Italy during the almost 3 years that Scotty's been in this program, and I've had some incredible cultural experiences and learned a lot and eaten tons of terrific, great food, I have to say, I haven't been able to connect at the level I'd like to have with the business community, and that's my fault, not the Italians' fault, because I just don't speak the language well enough to be actively involved. Well, I've made a lot of friends who speak English, but I couldn't join, for example, the Women's Professional Club and that sort of thing because I just don't speak it enough at that level.
I'll probably get a lot of communications from this, but it's a different world in Cork, too.
In terms of
it's a very thick accent. I'm not saying everybody, but the people that I've met in Cork, it's very different from Dublin and Belfast, Canada, because I just opened up this Pandora's box now, and I love the people in Cork. So, but
it's like the people here in Tuscany will joke about the accents of the folks down in Sicily and in the southern part of Italy. I think we all have those types of within one language, the variations in the dialects. And I remember when I was in Paris, and one of my girlfriends there, a French woman, her husband had worked for Eastman Kodak and taken the family a few years back to live in a small town outside of Nashville, Tennessee. And when she and I were becoming friends, she said, you know, I lived there for a year and I never understood a word what they're saying. And I said, well, depending on what part of the South you're in, I might be with you in that situation. So we all have our dialects. By the way, in Baltimore, there were times when I met folks and I said, I have no earthly idea what you just said.
Well, I think it's everywhere, really, that you can find.
I do too.
Well, that was my next question when you talked about the conference. I wanted to know if you knew of any like-minded type of people down in Cork, but you just answered that with the conference that's going on. So that's
good. He's hoping to attend that. In fact, he's going to Cork himself next week to learn more about the conference and to really start interacting with the folks in the department there. And unless something goes really awry, he is certainly planning on attending that conference in May. So I will keep you posted. We'll have to have another interview to update everyone.
Exactly. Very good. But let's get back to Gina here a bit.
Yeah.
I want to extrapolate on just what you do. You mentioned it in pretty general terms, but give me for instance, like a client. What are you doing with one particular client?
Yes, Dave. The thing that's great about that I enjoy, it's like when I was in the news business. It's something different every day depending on what's breaking news. It can be political. It can be a feature story. It can be an educational story. And that's the same thing when it comes to communications, because when I talked about the applications of it earlier, it's not just, oh, here's an organization and we need a new communications plan, although that could be it. But it really depends on the individual or the organization that individual represents, whom I'm meeting with. And we work together to determine what their needs are. And very interesting to point out that sometimes what an organization or an individual believes they want is not always, upon discussion, what it turns out they may need. To directly answer your question, I am working right now with an executive at a major software company, and his specific need that he wants me to work with him on, he oversees about 15,000 people in a global region. So he has a lot of responsibility. And because it's global, he can't go everywhere all the time. So as such, he's conducting a lot of his information or his updates quarterly, that sort of thing, through webinars. And he knows, and you know, and probably every listener knows, that those things can be deadly boring. And he is wanting to be repositioning himself as more of a thought leader and not just a, here are the numbers that anybody could read. You know, why have a webinar if you're not going to do something compelling with it? You could just hit the send button and shoot out an email that has all these numbers. Why bring people in to listen to something if you're not going to make the information you have to deliver compelling? But what he didn't know is how to do that and how to coordinate what he wants to say with some anecdotes or some stories or some way to bring these numbers to life, so that it can inspire and motivate his employees, back to what you were talking about earlier. So that's one of the things that we have been working on. And in fact, just last week, he delivered a new webinar to a group of new hires that was talking about his division and their mission. And instead of making it 25 points, we came together and decided, let's make it a couple of points, but make those points really memorable and really resonate. And he's been getting reviews now from these new hires that it was a different kind of webinar than what they're used to. It had very simple graphics, very interesting visuals that accompanied his speaking on the slide, and that he didn't sound like he was reading because he wasn't. And that he had some personal anecdotes and some funny stories that I helped him weave in. And we actually had just had a conference call this morning with his senior vice president above him. And the two of them said that this was really, really helpful. So that's the kind of difference that I hope to make. And then it can range. I've done campaigns for organizations that want to get out a message about a new immunization, for example. I've done political campaigns for candidates who want to distinguish themselves from a really big pack of other candidates. And they all end up sounding the same, but how does it make them sound different? So it really depends on the individual or the organization about what's going on and how to make them memorable and unique.
Very good. Very good. That's exactly what I want to find out.
There you go.
In keeping with that, how do you see your future, say, just from 3 months to 5 years down the road? What do you see for yourself?
Now that we're going to be relocating to a new part of Europe, I'm looking forward to finding out and exploring, learning more about what the opportunities over in Ireland and the UK may offer. I'm eager to get active in the community as a participant and joining in with the women's organizations and business organizations. I think that's going to be something that I haven't had a chance to do locally since we've moved abroad, this time in Italy, and I'm really looking forward to that. But I'm also looking forward to expanding even more globally. In June, in just a couple of months, in fact, I'm planning to go and travel to Nigeria and spend a month working with businesses and churches and organizations and politicians on a series of communication training seminars and workshops. And through that, I hope to open a whole new world of opportunity. And I think that would be very, very fulfilling. And then as a big goal for the next 5 years, I'd like to have another book published. I wrote a book the second year that we were here in Italy and enjoyed that experience very much. And I'd like to continue on that path as well.
Is there anything else you'd like to add, Gina?
Well, just to say, I think to underscore a little bit about what we were talking about, communications, and to say that I get so much satisfaction from watching people grow and develop their skills and to develop their authentic, unique voice and become dynamic and more memorable and more effective in anything and in whatever they do. And so no matter if it's helping someone with their own brand or their organization's plan, it's being able to be a part of them obtaining that success that really makes me feel that I've accomplished what I hope to set out. And it does come down to my love of storytelling from when I started out as a newspaper reporter and then a correspondent with CNN. It's all about resonating with an audience about the story that that person or that organization is trying to tell. And to me, storytelling, I think, is the name of the game, and I enjoy it so very much.
What I'd like, and as I mentioned, is ever so often, if you could join with me in terms of talking about business development internationally. Right now, I'm recording all the programs, but I'll be going to a rotation of recorded programs from 6 a.m. to midnight, 7 days a week, and then I'll be expanding to live programs. So with the live programs, I'll be doing forums. So I'm hoping that you come back and that are interested in this. And
I
you can be kind of my international liaison correspondent, too, and keep us posted on what you're doing over in Ireland, and we can hook up on many different levels, whether it's a business development or theater development or, you know, tourism even.
Absolutely, because as I mentioned, I love the tourism part of it. I love to soak up all the atmosphere of wherever it is, be it Baltimore, be it Cairo, be it Paris, or now coming up from Tuscany to Cork. And you, of course, Mr. Dave Festi, are always invited to come back to your stopping grounds of, I guess this is the Republic of Ireland as opposed to Belfast, but you are more than
I've been
welcome.
Throughout. We'll no, I might stop in sometime.
There you go. I've really enjoyed it. I would love to be continue to be part of as you grow as well.
Well, very much. Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. But as this is an introductory show, just to get to know Gina London, I hope that we can continue this throughout on an ongoing basis. So give us a little contact info there, Gina.
Yes, absolutely. For you and for anyone who may be out there listening, the easiest way to contact me is through my website at ginalondon.com. There you can email me directly. And also through my website at ginalondon.com, you can contact me and connect with me on Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, Tumblr, and of course how you and I met, Dave, on LinkedIn.
Thank you very much, Gina. Appreciate you talking to me.
You bet. It was a pleasure. I really enjoy it. Love to meet other travelers on this planet.
Me too. I've been talking to Gina London, international communications consultant, one-time resident of Baltimore and former veteran CNN correspondent, who hopefully will be my international correspondent. And
yes,
we'll talk a lot more down the road there. You've been listening to Baltimore International. I'm Dave Custy, your host on Baltimore Internet Radio.